preaching and teaching Christ from all of Scripture. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Testament, and they read some of these Old Testament laws like slavery and such, and they say that is exactly why I want nothing to do with the Bible or the God of Christianity. Well, I plan to look at that today. We're going to go through some challenging set of laws in the Old Testament, laws particularly regarding the practice of slavery. And I want us to look at this with redeemed eyes. I want us to see that God's intention in regulating this very sinful human practice was to set people ultimately free in Jesus Christ. So we shouldn't throw him under the bus. The Old Testament laws were designed to teach us about his goodness, his righteousness, his desire that people in his image be treated well and fairly. So today we're going to look at Exodus 21 and some challenging laws here that we ultimately would see how all of this is resolved in the gospel and the person and the work of Jesus Christ. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. As always, we ask you to visit us on the web at agradio.org, agradio.org. The number's 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. Find us on Facebook. So thankfully, you take time out of your day to tune into Abounding Grace Radio. Here is now the program from Exodus chapter 21, which I have titled, Servants for Life. Why are we going through these kind of things? I have to give this kind of qualification tonight and justification for what we're doing, because this is the kind of stuff that people open up the Old Testament. And when anybody wants to attack Christianity, I can assure you there are a few places that are going to go, and tonight would be one of them. And last time we studied this test with the ceremonial and moral, but now before us are the civil laws that governed Israel as a people, as a nation. And I have to say, these are not what we are directly under today, but certainly there are moral principles and things that reflect the righteous character of God, and we learn a lot from them. We take that from them, and we apply it in that way. The benefit of studying these laws is that we see what God is like to his people, and we have a good understanding, too, of justice and can anticipate one day when we enter the land that there will be no more anything that offends in the land. We're going to learn a lot doing this. God cares about people made in his image. He certainly does. And how people interact with one another and how people treat one another. And God is then deeply caring about how we live as his people. What we do as his people. God loves justice. He's a just God. Equity among neighbors. Well, tonight as we open up this first section, it's not by coincidence or not by chance that we're dealing with, as we begin this set of rules, we deal with the issue of slavery. If you were to ask me, well, Pastor, what is your main point tonight? And working to come up with that, tonight I want to do something very simple, and it is to show you how God regulated the practice of slavery, and I'm going to qualify all this, regulated the practice of slavery in the Old Testament in such a way, Old Covenant, that it would be used and always would be a purpose to teach Israel about deliverance. That the institution and what we're going to study about slavery would be regulated and used to teach these people about deliverance. An opportunity then further to love their neighbor. That's what we're going to see. So this was to be that kind of opportunity. As we open up Exodus chapter 21 tonight and we come across all these laws on slavery, it begins with this great subject of slavery. And I want you to remember how the Decalogue, the 10 words, the 10 commandments began. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of
slavery. Everyone in Israel had a good understanding of what forced servitude was. That didn't need to be explained. They got it. They understood it. Involuntary slavery. It was awful. If you need to know what it looked like, just go back to Exodus chapter 1, and you remember that that cruel Pharaoh who no longer knew Joseph, what he did to the people of Israel, he beat them. He put them under heavy burdens and heavy toil under the sun. It was oppressive, and you have this in Exodus 2. Then the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage. And they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. For I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, that cruel, oppressive hand of slavery. So cruel, so hard, they had loathed the Egyptians, and that wicked tyrant Pharaoh would even cast their babies, remember, in Exodus 1 and 2, into the Nile River. This is the kind of stuff we think of when we hear the word slavery, don't we? We immediately think of things in history like the European slave trade movement or what took place here in our country in the time of country where you remember Africans were brought here on ships and there was involuntary forced slavery away from families, mothers and children ripped apart from each other, separated from families, put in the homes of cruel masters. There was forced submission. That's what we think of when we think of slavery. That's what comes to my mind when I think of slavery. Not so different than the kind of forced servitude in many respects that we saw in Exodus 1. The forced slavery, much of that was common in the things that we know about slavery. Well, here we come tonight to the book of the covenant, and what is the first thing that God addresses? It's this issue, but it's different than what you think when you think of slavery. Many Christians, especially of a post-millennial and sort of reconstructive theonomic bent and emphasis, have advanced sort of openly statements like the Bible doesn't condemn slavery. And I hear that said and I somewhat recoil. I get a little nervous when I hear that because it's easy to read the Bible anachronistically. It's easy to do certain things to the Bible, meaning that we set alongside of each other practices, our things that we're familiar with alongside of and in order with the cultural practices of other times and in other cultures, and we end up, what we do is read things back into the Bible as we understand them, which does have a particular culture and a place understood in the times in which they live. Some of the things that went on in biblical times, we are very uncomfortable with. It's a different time and place. But I want everyone to answer this question tonight so that we understand what God is doing here. I want everyone to look over at verse 16 of chapter 21, which I'm not really engaging tonight too much. But so that you have this in front of you, I'm going to put it out the whole idea that anyone would ever say that forced servitude or man-stealing or putting someone in bondage against his will, the Bible expressly spoke against. You'll notice that in verse 16. Whoever steals a man and sells him, and anyone found in possession of him shall surely be put to death. So God never put up with that. God never accepted that. It unequivocally, without doubt, condemns man stealing, involuntary slavery. It's been mentioned from the pulpit, and Dr. Godfrey mentioned it a few weeks ago, the problem of human trafficking. And I have felt that same way of how nonchalant and careless that issue is just presented in our day. And the shocking, staggering statistic that 12,000 people were trafficked and sold last year in San Diego. I mean, that's just unreal to think about. This kind of stuff selling of human beings with wicked masters, as we would think about it, forcing people into servitude. Had they lived in Israel, in the theocracy, they would have been put to death. God didn't approve of that. God did not approve of that. And so here he raises the issue of what they understood to be slavery. And notice what he does. It would be unthinkable for Israel, who knew the practice and what they had experienced in Egypt, to now do that to their own people. It would be unthinkable for them to act that way to their own people now. Since God had come down and freed them, since God had heard their cries from that kind of brutal institution, such a wicked and cruel tyrant who drowned their babies in the Nile, for them to do the same thing to their own brethren would demonstrate no understanding of grace and gospel, would it? It would fit the whole parable of the unforgiving servant who was forgiven a great debt and then went out and found someone who had a lesser debt and grabbed him by the throat, demanding payment. So the Lord takes what was evil and wrong, and he does something that is really remarkable in the theocracy. What is it? Well, he did something that would constantly display their separateness in the earth. I love this. The wisdom of God is so beautifully shown here. I hope you see it tonight and appreciate how good your Lord is. How did he want slavery handled? Well, he begins in verse 1 with manservants. You'll notice there that he says right at the beginning, when you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. Keep in mind, there's not forced slavery. It's not what this is. He shall serve 6 years, go out free, and then pay nothing. What you have described are those who willingly put themselves up for hiring and became the property of the master. In a way, it's similar to the job interview today, that only once you agreed that you would become a slave, you would then become the property and you would work for 6 years. You'll notice that there. But what was the system designed to fix? That's the question. Leviticus 25 says this, if one of your brethren becomes poor and falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him like a stranger or sojourner that he may live with you. There were generally two reasons this happened in the society of Israel. If people were caught stealing, or the poor among them, it helped to solve the problem of the poor who could not feed themselves, or families who got in great debt, or people who just had problems, or people who were irresponsible, and people who stole. There were no government bailouts. You couldn't walk down and get unemployment. God, I'm driving down the other day, and I see a guy on the side of the road, and he has a big sign. See if you can hit me with a quarter. That one really bothers me, you know. I always feel incredibly guilty when I see that. I would feel bad if I hit him in the head with a quarter. But, I would feel incredibly guilty. And my first response is, probably like some of your first responses, go get a job now. Easy for me to say, I guess. When we look at what God's doing here, he had a system of rehabilitation. For the poor, he had a way to get them back on their feet. The best thing they could do is put themselves up. In this way, the Lord gave a way for people like this to have fresh starts. There's something so powerful in that, isn't there? 6 years they would work. The goal was to help the down and the out of their communities to become productive and responsible citizens in the kingdom. I want you to notice God's law here in the theocracy. God cared about the down and outs. My attitude to the down and outs has not been good. But how did he care about the down and outs? 6 years of work. Now you say, well, what was the goal? Here's what I love about this. In the law itself, remember what it said in the fourth commandment. Honor the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your male servants or your female servants, that what? They may rest as well as you. He was concerned about slaves. Why? Look at his concern in the fourth. Why did he root it in the fourth? Why would he root that concern of servants in the fourth commandment? Well, the Sabbath principle was at work. They would come under a master for 6 years. They would be a slave, but it was never designed to be permanent. Now think of the message in this. I'll get there. Upon the seventh year, he would be freed and pay nothing. So the masters had to rest on the seventh day, every seventh day, remembering what? That they were slaves in the land of Egypt. And the slaves had to rest, anticipating their rest to come. The whole system was designed to teach Israel the gospel. The rest anticipated, we know, was a rest that anticipated entering Christ. They were in bondage. They were poor. They were afflicted. They were the lowly of the earth. They were the scum on the side of the road. They were the ones in Egypt treated this way. And God opened a door to them. God came down, pulled them out, put them in his house, gave them rest, fed them, cared for them, loved them, and built a house for them. And so this taught them to look a little differently at the down and outs, didn't it? That they had a real goal to help the down and outs to the rest that they enjoy. I love that. I love that. That is Christianity. When we have been redeemed and we understand the call to love our neighbor, here you go. The goal was not servitude. The goal was Sabbath. The whole practice was to tell the story of the Bible over and over and over again in their homes. I mean, awesome. Think about this. Here's your kids around the table, and you've brought in a down and out, and this person's going to work for you and then be free. Talk about a home life illustration right in front of you. So the whole thing was designed to teach them the gospel all the time, over and over, of their own deliverance. And the master was required to be a kind master, to treat him with equity, to treat him with love. Once the 6 years was over, the master didn't say, psh, out of here. The master didn't do that. What happened? God gave a command. Here's what I want you to do, masters, to your servants. I want you to load them up. I want you to give them all kinds of food and blessing. Why? Well, how about this? Deuteronomy 15. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, then in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. And when you send him away from you, you shall not let him go away empty-handed. You shall supply him liberally from your flock, from your threshing floor, and from your wine press. From what the Lord your God has blessed you with, you shall give to them. You, sure it is, you shall remember you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this thing today. See it again? I did this. When you came out of Egypt, I gave you everything. I loaded you up. Your wagons were full. I gave you all kinds of blessing. Guess what you get to go do now? Is it a bad question to say, well, what in the world does that have to do with us today living in 2016? Yeah. Everything. Won't this affect in the house how husbands love their wives as Christ loved the church? Won't it mean a lot for parents training children not to provoke them to wrath, to hate them, but to show love to them, remembering the purpose is to lead them to rest? Shouldn't it affect Christian employers who treat their workers well, not as commodities, not as soulless bodies who are just making money for them, but that they would care about the down and outs who work for them to lead them to rest? And pray for them. I'll be honest. Some of the worst things that I've seen are in the Christian world is how Christians have treated their employees. Farmers. I worked on a farm once. I was appalled. I was absolutely appalled to support the mansions next door while four or five a night slept on a bunk on the property. It's not right. that is not right. Do the masters of the house know the gospel? If the master of the house knows the gospel, you're going to love your servants. Paul said, servants, be obedient to your masters, but masters, do the same things to them. Give up threatening, knowing that your own master also is in heaven and there's no partiality with him. Don't threaten. Nurture, love. There's a goal to all this. There's something here that's even stronger tonight. I want you to look back at verse 5. He describes a slave who would work for 6 years, and then he was set free, and then notice in verse 2, you'll notice there that he shall go out free the seventh year. In verse 5, if the servant plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, and I'm not going to go out free then, what does the master do? Master brings him to God. And he shall bring him to the door or the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall be his slave forever. What a scene. After 6 years, it's been so good in the house. Oh, it's been great in the house. Man, this has just been, why would I go anywhere? I don't want to leave you. He's brought to the elders and plainly says, I want, he's brought to God. And then he would be brought to the master's doorpost, and they would take a large, sharp object, and they would jam it through the ear into the doorpost. There would be blood on the doorpost. And the servant, his ear would be opened in an oath ceremony. He wanted to live forever with his master. I love the master. I don't want to leave the master. He's a kind master. He's a master that cares for me. He's a master that loves. He's a master that provides for me. He cares for my whole house. John 8. Jesus is standing before the leaders of Israel. And I want you to notice in John 8 what he says in verse 32. Listen to this. Actually, just back up. So 31. So Jesus said to the Jews who believed him, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. They answered and said to him, we are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it you say we'll become free? Jesus answered, now follow me here for a minute. We've never been slaves. Jesus, yes, you have. Oh, yes, you are. You're slaves. Most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave to sin. You're slaves to sin. You're in a house that should be for your rehabilitation. I can set you free by the gospel, but you won't come. Now look carefully at verse 35. The slave does not remain in the house forever, but a son does. A slave does not remain in the house forever, but a son does. He's right in Exodus 21. A son abides forever in the house. A slave went into the house with the goal of receiving what? Rest. In that house he finds it. Remember the one provision? That if he loved his master, he would never want to leave that house because he found rest? What was Jesus saying? I'm the master of the house. You hate me, he said to the Jews. And you show you're a slave to sin. You show you're not free. But here's the truth that sets someone free. When they know me, when they know what kind of master I am, when they understand me, when they believe me, they enter the rest. That's promised to slave. And a true son never wants to leave that house. That's the gospel. Isn't it so beautiful? Be careful you don't miss the slavery problem. The real slavery problem. You want to say to people today, be careful in all your fighting of the earthly slavery problem that you don't miss the real slavery problem. Everyone's a slave in this life, either of sin leading to death or righteousness leading to life. I'm the master of the house, says Jesus. How you relate to me tells me whether you're free or not. How do you relate to Jesus? That'll tell you whether you're free or not. In other words, are you the prodigal saying, I went out of the house? Or are you the prodigal saying, I got to get back to the house? He's so good. Why would I ever want to be out of that house? He loves me. He cares for me. He's a good master. I close with this. Phil Ryken tells the story of Abraham Lincoln, who was appalled to see the buying and selling of human beings. I quote, his heart was especially drawn to a young woman on the block whose story seemed to be told in her eyes. She looked with hatred and contempt on everyone around her. She had been used and abused all her life, and this time was but one more cruel humiliation. The bidding began, and Lincoln offered a bid. As other amounts were bid, he counterbid with larger amounts until he won. When he paid the auctioneer the money and took the title, the young woman, he stared at him with vicious contempt. She asked him what he was going to do next with her. He said, I'm going to set you free. Free, she asked. Free for what? Just free, Lincoln answered. Completely free. Free to do what I want to do? Yes, he said. Free to do whatever you want to do. Free to say whatever I want to say? Yes. Free to say wherever you want to say. Free to go wherever I want to go? She added with skepticism. Lincoln answered, you're free to go anywhere you want to go. Then I'm going with you, she said with a smile. All of us are intensely bitter until we're free. And that's what this section has taught us. God, all the way back in Exodus 21, was teaching Israel there was a way to be free. If you don't think the gospel's in the Old Testament, you've missed it. Through the son. And now, you want to live in the house as a son, with joy and with peace, knowing everything's provided for you. That should affect everything you do now as a free son. Remembering that you were once slaves in the land of Egypt, that the Lord your God has set you free, you're going to know your freedom by your desire to be in the house. And you're going to know it by your desire now that all the down and outs of the society would come to know the same freedom, the same rest that you do. A son abides in the house forever.
Thank you for listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.